Hello, America. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay. Due to technical difficulties, we lost the first few minutes of this web radio broadcast. Therefore, I have re-recorded this introduction to the show, and we have edited it in. Thank goodness for the wonders of technology. This week, our special commentator, Jeffrey Hedquist, is sitting in as the guest host of the show, and Jeffrey will be interviewing Miss Whitney Wogan on the topic of women and money, and specifically, what women in particular need to know about money, why they need to know it, and how women can learn it easily. Whitney is the founder of the website that is devoted to women and money, called womenwithmoneymoxie.com. Joining the show also will be Mr. Chris Opperman. Chris is a young Harvard student and was third place winner in the Young Scholars Competition held at Mises University this summer. Chris is contributing valuable comments that will further explain the various principles of reality economics. Next, you will hear Jeffrey Hedquist and Miss Whitney Wogan.
And Whitney, are you there?
I am here.
Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Nice to be here.
Very good. I've just given you a brief but energetic introduction, and we're delighted to have you, and wondered if we have Christopher yet on the line. Okay, and Christopher will be on just a moment, and we're looking forward. This will be a call-in show, so don't hesitate to give us a call at 800-313-9443. We'll put you in the queue, and we'll get to you as soon as we can. We have a show that we could probably ask one question and continue for three solid days. Just covering things, but I guess we're going to not get 3 days. We're going to have a good solid hour, though. One of the questions, and maybe this is the basic, you know, seed question for you, Whitney, and that is, what is the first thing that a woman should do to start getting control of her money? And I also have to say that this is not gender specific. This is information that every man, woman, and child should know and would be useful in today's changing economic climate. And how would you answer that?
Well, Jeffrey, it's a great question. Really, the very first thing a woman should do is, and I think this goes, like you said, across the board for men as well, is to stop waiting, to stop assuming that someone else is going to do it for you. For women, it's to stop assuming that Prince Charming is going to be coming. So the first thing is to realize, oh, I've got to do it. So step up to the plate and take that first step, which is really just a decision that you're going to do it.
And are there, and I know you have a series of steps, and I hesitate, but I'm going to ask. I know you've got steps, and we want to get those steps in because it kind of gives people a template to follow.
That would be great, yeah. I think the first thing, like I said, is to stop waiting for someone else to do it. I think number two is to start getting yourself educated. That is probably the most important thing a woman can do after deciding to take responsibility, and men too, and men as well. So start getting educated. And a great place to get educated is to get the book, Whatever Happened to Penny Candy. That's a great place. The third thing that they can do is to start getting control of the basics. The fourth is to get a good team around them. And the fifth is to get engaged, get in the game, start doing something.
I think that makes sense. Very good information. Okay, looks like we've returned after the break with a few technical challenges. Michael, I understand you have joined us. You're calling in from Des Moines.
I am attending a meeting that is a community meeting here in Des Moines, Iowa. The Federal Reserve representatives are meeting in front of a community group that are voicing their disapproval of the Federal Reserve's actions, or inactions as they're putting it, and I will be speaking in front of the group to make my views known that it is the Federal Reserve itself that is the primary culprit in this the suffering that is going to be reported today. And so that's going to be a very interesting meeting. It's going to last till about 4:30 this afternoon.
That's good. Even though the message you have to deliver will only take about 30 seconds, I hope it rocks the boat.
Yeah. Well, you know, these people are actually looking at the Federal Reserve as needing to actually put more regulations in place to protect the public. And unfortunately, they're not looking at the root cause of the problem that the Federal Reserve is responsible for, which is the creation of money out of thin air. And so we're going to be myself and Mr. Patrick Barron, who taught Austrian economics at the University of Iowa and also teaches at the University of Wisconsin Graduate School of Banking, we are both going to be speaking today. Now, so you mentioned at the beginning that there was a technical difficulty. Do we have Whitney and Chris on the line as well?
We do. Whitney, you're still there, yes?
Yes, I am. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Whitney. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Good, good. Okay. So what is the, how does the Federal Reserve really impact women, as you see it, Whitney?
Well, I think one way they impact women through inflation and through a devaluing of their dollars. And one of the best ways to learn about this, and it's a very simple, easy book, is getting Whatever Happened to Penny Candy by Richard Mayberry. I would recommend every woman read that book who's listening to this program, and men as well. It's a fascinating book.
Yeah, we have that actually featured on our website at radiofreemarket.com. And, the dilution of money, the planned inflation that the Federal Reserve creates is actually the single biggest problem for all of us, because how can we actually calculate into the future? And it is the root cause of the boom and bust cycle, the so-called business cycle. And I'm really kind of interested in your take on how women in particular can educate themselves beyond this point of starting just to read this one book.
Well, I think after there are several books in the series that Mayberry has that are great. I think after that there are your website has some great articles on it and some great resources. I also think that if you start listening, if you go to the Mises Institute, Mises.org, and that's Mises.org, that's definitely a bigger step up. I would recommend these first steps before going to the Mises.org. But there is more information on that website than you could digest in a lifetime.
Sure.
I think that's one thing. I also think talking to, listening to your radio show, talking with people, just starting to get in the conversation. I think that's one of the things that women have kept themselves out of the conversation.
Uh-huh.
And then it's important that we step up into the conversation. Women control over 50%. It's now 51% of the wealth in the United States. So going forward, it's going to be tremendously important that they understand the forces that are going to affect this wealth.
Well, I've kind of jumped in and inserted myself into the show today, so let me take one more step. And, one of the common presentations that is going to be presented here today rather strongly is that what we saw in the crisis that really got started in the last couple of years is a failure of the free market. In other words, it was caused by government deregulation. And I'd like to hear Chris and you, Whitney, also comment on that. Whoever wants to go first.
Chris, go ahead. We haven't heard from you yet, and then I'll chime in.
Okay. Thank you, Whitney. Hello, everybody. I guess one of the things to say about the Federal Reserve is that a lot of the actions that it takes, as Michael and Winnie were pointing out, and Jeffrey too, would just affect our daily lives. You know, just the fact that there's inflation and that the central bank is creating inflation means that if we want to save and we want to, be sure that we have a secure financial future, now we're kind of forced to be a little bit more creative. Instead of simply just saving up money, we have to invest it. Or, we have to make sure that just by simply holding it, our savings aren't eroded. And so I think that's just that's just one of the very more subtle and nefarious effects of central banking. That what it does is it discourages saving and it discourages us to think in the long term. And that's
it encourages us to actually get into debt and to spend.
Exactly. Exactly. And especially people that have to be financially independent, it's just that it's an added burden that they have to cope with.
I think also that we hear a lot about the failure of the free market, but I think it's really important to look at what is a free market. and that really we have not had a free market in this country since 1913. Free markets mean that the interest rates are set on a free market basis, and starting in 1913 we had a central agency, the Federal Reserve, which in effect, through their actions, set interest rate policy. So really we haven't had a fully functioning free market in this country for close to 100 years.
And that means that that interest rates, which really are the price of money, are artificially set and that they give a false signal. It's as if suddenly the grocery store says, okay, everybody, the price of milk is now, you know, 2 cents for a gallon. Well, it's going to induce consumers of milk to actually, you know, purchase more. Similarly, low interest rates by the Fed induce people who borrow money to borrow more.
And then they change it to try to adjust the system instead of letting the market do it. And people's, you know, people's savings get moved and their whole, their plan gets pulled out from under them.
Mm-hmm. This is called malinvestment. And
right.
Malinvestment means that, particularly individuals who are longer term in their thinking, people who are making factories and things of that nature, they, invest in projects that they think will be profitable when in fact they can't be. But for the consumer, the husband and the wife, the single mom, they also think, well, geez, you know, I probably am going to have this job, and therefore I can handle this cash flow and this debt load that I have, and that's where the trouble comes.
And I think, we've seen that with the most recent meltdown in housing. People thought they could handle this debt. They could service their debt on their home.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the tenor of this conversation is that what we're seeing here is that as long as there's a centrally controlled, manipulative, monopoly, central bank system, we all have to be basically defensive in our approach to how we're going to plan our finances. And the best things, among the best things we can do is, you know, continue to save, continue to stay employed, make ourselves valuable to other, to our employer and to our customers if we are a business owner, and go from there. Well, I'm getting the signal that I'm going to have to get back to this meeting, which starts in just a couple of minutes, but I'm glad that I was able to insert myself and talk to you guys for just a minute, and I know that you're going to have a wonderful show, and I want to thank you very much for being on with me, and you, Chris, and, of course, you, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you for being up there in Des Moines and being one of the balanced voices speaking to the members of that acclaimed body of governors.
Okay. I'll be talking to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Very good. So, Whitney, with all that going on, the market's changing and the dollar devaluing, and you, of course, are in a position to give an awful lot of people, mostly women, but not just, advice on, you know, what do you do to protect yourself? What do you do to protect your purchasing power? Do you have a, other than the, or maybe in addition to the steps that you had talked about, a quick, and maybe there's not a quick, advice that you give to people in today's market, what they should do with their money? Should they be saving? Should they be investing? Should they be buying down debt?
Well, it really obviously depends on each person's individual situation. For somebody, let's say that somebody is deep in debt, I do think that tackling that debt is probably going to be their most important action, because if as things go forward, say there's more job layoffs or that type of thing, they're going to need to be able to service that debt. So I'd say paying down debt is probably the most important thing for somebody in that situation. If somebody does not have a lot of debt and has, you know, money coming in, I think at that point they're really going to be wanting to get, and again, I keep coming back to this, but it's, you know, to get educated about what's going on. Look at, there's another book, Harry Brown's Fail-Safe Investing is another great resource for people.
Right.
Another great resource for people. I do think when you save, I think saving is tremendously important, and we've seen our savings rate in this country go from negative to, I think it's around 6% right now, which has happened very quickly, and that to me is a very encouraging sign. So I think saving is a very good thing. I think also one other point, Jeffrey, is that your dollars are going to be becoming less valuable over time. So starting to put your money in real assets, real things that can't be devalued over time is important.
Excellent advice. This is Radio Free Market. We're going to be back after about 3 minutes. So please stay tuned. We've got a very exciting show with Whitney Wogan and Chris Opperman. And I'm Jeffrey Hedquist. We'll see you in a couple of minutes.
And welcome back to Radio Free Market. This is Jeffrey Hedquist, and I am your guest. Michael McKay is your usual mentor here, and he, of course, is up in Des Moines speaking his mind, and hopefully the minds of several other of us, too, members of the Federal Reserve who are up there today to talk to the people. I'm making little quote marks with my fingers here. All right, and we have Whitney Wogan, who is the Money Moxie woman. And we have Chris Opperman, who is one of the top scholars from the Mises Institute, young scholars. And so we've got a good group here today. We've been covering a number of good things about money, not just for women, but for everyone. And often women are in relationships, as are men. What do you do? How do you handle that when you want to make a change, when you want to do the right thing with your money, and maybe your partner, whoever it happens to be, disagrees in one way or another? And Whitney, this is something that I think you've dealt with a lot. Maybe you could give all of us some good advice.
Well, thanks, Jeffrey. Yes, I actually have dealt with this, and that's really how I first started getting really interested in money, was my husband came to me soon after we were married, maybe a year after we were married, and said, we are heading off a financial cliff here. We need to change something. We are getting deep into credit card debt. And being the responsible person I was, I immediately blamed him and thought, how could he let this happen to us? And I eventually realized that that wasn't getting any traction and that I needed to take responsibility for my part of what was happening. So we agreed to meet once a week to look at and start handling our finances. And I would say right off the bat, two things we learned right off the bat were, one, not to meet and talk about money when either of us were tired or hungry. And it's such a simple, basic thing, but I have women say to me, oh my gosh, this has made all the difference in my relationship when we talk about money. So don't have a financial meeting at 9:30 at night just before you're going to bed. Don't have a meeting, you know, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and you haven't eaten for 4 hours. So that simple thing, that very physical, simple thing can really help in dealing with money.
This is great advice. Thinking back to all the interesting discussions I've had with my wife about this very subject. So continue on.
Yeah, it really is a basic, it's like a fundamental for my husband and I. If we're starting to talk about money, sometimes we'll say, oh, wait a minute. I'll say, I'm tired. I'm sorry. We need to put this off, you know. So another thing that we have done and that I think is really important is to establish a common things that you can agree on, not even necessarily common goals, but what are common things that you both want? So you have a basis of, there's got to be one or two things that you can agree on. You know, maybe it is paying down your debt, or maybe it is, you know, you want to get rid of, you know, that Citi card or whatever the basic common thing is. And then use that as a stepping stone. And then I would say come up with, we meet once a week. Most, you know, not every week. We sometimes stuff comes up, but generally we meet once a week. We have a set time and we talk about money. We look at what's coming in and what's going out and talk about it. But we also have one other thing that we've done is we have a rule that if someone brings a dark mood to the meeting or gets a little snippy, we actually have a hat. It's changed over the years. Our hat right now is a big hat with a chicken on it. And that person, it's agreed before you go into the meeting, if someone does that, you have to put on the chicken hat. So it's as simple as some of these basic things of trying to make it a little more light and a little, but it's not, it's serious stuff, but we don't need to take it seriously. You know, we can have some fun with it and be more light with it. And really that requires both of you agreeing on some basic steps. I think those are like the most, I've noticed that those give the most power, the most impact to couples that implement those steps.
I think it makes good sense. Now, you know, you'll have some situations where people get married and they haven't talked about economics, their belief in where money goes, where it comes from, that sort of thing. And so sometimes, without their knowing it,
an Austrian economic person might marry a Keynesian. And, you know, that can cause some basic philosophical differences as well. And I think, you know, a couple of the books that you mentioned, the Penny Candy book, Harry Brown's investment book, are good stepping stones so that they can get, both of them can get an understanding of where that might go. And Chris, in your situation, oftentimes you're dealing with people who may not be in permanent relationships, but they certainly are getting their feet, you know, stepping into the stream of economics, maybe for the first time in a lot of ways. What kind of advice do you give to neophytes in this area, which might also apply to people in relationships?
Sure thing. Well, I guess one of the advantages to kind of being familiar with Austrian economics or reality economics is the fact that it's so commonsensical. And so, you know, a lot of times that, you know, being able to explain things to people in a really down-to-earth manner oftentimes helps, you know, helps them and to see that it makes sense. You know, reality economics is something that's really relevant to our lives. I mean, you know, it's just the fact that, you know, you can't keep swiping the credit card forever. You know, you have to come up with the money and you have to pay it off, and you just can't keep going deeper and deeper into debt. You know, in the same way that a family can't do it, you know, that's a government can't, you know, keep swiping the country's credit card forever and ever and ever. And so it's these simple lessons that are, you know, so applicable.
I think what you're saying is perfect, both of you, because learning about economics from the very personal and then gradually expanding that into the corporate and political is perfect. So we'll be back after 3 minutes with much more. Okay, we are back with Radio Free Market. This is Jeffrey Hedquist, and I'm usually your co-host, but I am your host today. We have a couple of very smart people on making me look good, and that is Whitney Wogan, who is the Money Moxie Lady, and her website is womenwithmoneymoxie.com. And we have Chris Opperman, who is one of the top three scholars, young scholars from the Mises Institute. And so we've got a couple of representatives from people who aren't often here with the old white guys, and that is we have a very intelligent woman. We have a very intelligent young guy. So this is exciting. One of the questions that was that Michael had done a little bit of surveying on that came up, and that is the question of bankruptcy. I think even on your website, Whitney, you said that in 2003 more women declared bankruptcy than graduated college. Now, obviously, there are lots of causes for that. Why don't we talk a little bit about the dangers of doing that, if somebody's considering that, and then also the way to recover from that.
Okay, that sounds great. Do you want me to go, Jeffrey?
Yeah, please.
Okay, great. Well, certainly with bankruptcy, you have to weigh the pros and cons. The con is that it can affect your credit report, your credit, for many years to come in the future. So it's something to be undertaken with a lot of consideration. I think that with what interests me is helping. I have worked with many women who have declared bankruptcy and how you come back from a bankruptcy, and I think that is a lot about understanding how credit works. So that would entail. And on my website, I have a couple of blog posts about credit and your credit reports, your credit score, and how you can actually start to work with those things and bring your scores up so that you can start getting back into the system easier. There's a great book, another great book called Debt Cures by Kevin Trudeau, and I would recommend anybody that's looking at bankruptcy or has gone through bankruptcy and wants to start working with their credit, get that going again.
Okay. Chris, do you have any comments?
Well, I guess it's kind of a little bit more on the, you know, academic side of things, because, you know, I don't know a lot of the practical aspects. But I guess just one of the things that's important to help people actually not put themselves in a situation in which they're bankrupt is, you know, to understand, you know, basic economics, kind of what happened with the housing crisis. You know, a lot of people signed on to something that, you know, was too good to be true. And, you know, I think if people are armed with an understanding of what are the different factors that could actually be driving this housing boom or, you know, this all this miraculous, you know, free money in the mortgage market, then, you know, that might make people think twice before they actually decide to invest so much in the value of their home.
Okay. Good point. And it's all based on if we had all had crystal balls and we were able to look ahead and say, I know exactly what my cash flow is going to be for the next 12 years, no problem. But, you know, we don't, so we need to be prepared, and the advice that we're getting today is great for that. I would remind everybody that if you want to call in, it's 800-313-9443. We look forward to hearing from you, and we look forward to your participation. Whitney, you talked about building a support team, and that's something that I think we all need. You know, it's not just good, we caught Radio Free Market, and we know everything there is to know and read a couple of books. Sometimes we need help from somebody who's done it, somebody who's gone through it, somebody who's got information that may be parallel to ours or greater than ours. And what would you say about building a support team? What kind of advice can you give us?
I would say that there's several tiers of people that you need in your support network. You obviously need, you know, your friends close to you that are your cheerleaders that will say, you can do this, keep going, you know, your partner, the people that are closest to you that are not naysayers, but that are true supporters and cheerleaders. But you need a couple of other layers in your support network, and those would be the layers of professionals. As you start getting more educated and more comfortable with dealing with your money, you're probably going to want to be talking with CPAs, with your accountant, your bookkeepers. So you might even get to the point where you need to talk with some lawyers for setting up corporations, that type of thing. And we're moving up the scale here of what your needs might be. There's a third tier, too, of your support network, which is people who can help take, free up some of your time. And this is especially important for women. I know, you know, I have two daughters. We have two businesses. We're busy. So that I have one of the people on my support network or my support team is my cleaning woman who comes once a week. She's fabulous. And she frees up 4 hours of my time each week, and that is such a valuable time. So we need to be thinking bigger in terms of who's on your support team and where is your time the most valuable.
Good, good. And from you, Chris?
I think I'm going to have to pass on that one.
Okay. Well, listen, you know, I'm sure that your peers would be smart if they would get you on their support team.
I think so, too. And actually, yeah, that's another great point, Jeffrey, is friends that are educated in a particular area. We have had occasionally at our house, we've had financial meetings and have invited people to come speak or educate each other about areas that we don't know much about. I think it's a great idea for anybody to start creating that type of environment. So we're all talking about this and grabbing a book to read and reading it in a book club, but have it be a financial book club, something like that.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Looking forward, you know, and as I say, nobody has a crystal ball, but what kind of advice would you give people, maybe in addition or maybe expanding one of those 5 points that you talked about, to get a better financial handle on where things might be going, what they can do now to educate themselves, what they can do now to prepare for you know, the coming future?
Well, certainly I think one of the most important things that people can do is to get control of their basics. And this is really where my husband and I were able to really make a difference in our life by coming together and every week meeting. So what that means, getting control of your basics, is how much money is coming in and how much money is going out and what does your debt look like. And for women and for men, obviously, it's helpful to really start looking at what is your net worth, what is your income. An income statement is basically just your income and expenses for a given period of time. So if women would actually start looking at what is happening, what's coming in, what's going out for a particular period of time, and what is their big picture, step back and look at what is their overall net worth, I think that those are a couple of things that will really, really help, because if the foundation is wobbly, we all know what happens to the building. So these are foundational pieces that a lot of women don't necessarily want to spend time looking at. It's not fun to budget. It's not fun to forecast. It's certainly not sexy. It can be. A lot of women that I talk with, they say it feels too restrictive. They don't want to do that. But I say to them that if they can... Do they ever try and build, you know, bake a cake without a cake pan? You need that structure to make a beautiful cake. So you need the structure of a budget and knowing what's coming in and going out to go forward in your life. And I'd say those foundational pieces are really important. And I would say they really fell out over the last, 18, 20 years during the, the NASDAQ boom and the housing boom, that we got pretty loose with our money. We don't know necessarily where it's going.
I think you make a good point. And the other point is that so much of the tension and stress over money is psychological. And if you kind of know where you are instead of kind of guessing, it can give you a sense of control and you feel better about it. You can sleep a little bit better. We do have a caller, Mary from North Carolina. We would love to answer a question that you might have.
Okay, well, that sounds great. I'm just hoping I'm not out of the area of expertise, but it is a financial question and one that I haven't heard raised on any of the, financial shows. So what my question is, about all the foreclosures, the houses that they're foreclosing on, maybe the owner owed $100,000 for a house. Then if you go in and buy the house for $38,000, shouldn't the property tax be paid on what you're willing to pay for the house instead of, what the loan the bank had on it from, 10, 20 years ago?
All right, let's toss that in Whitney's lap. First of all, you've had more real estate experience.
Yeah. Mary, that was a great question. In Colorado, our property taxes are assessed every 2 years.
Right.
So there is going to be a lag time between what you pay if you bought the house now. And I don't know where you are in North Carolina and what the situation is there.
Right.
It might be the same type of thing where you might still have to pay the previous assessment until it's reassessed at a new rate.
Right. We did that until the house closed. And in the meantime, we told the appraiser at the tax office that, the house, what we paid for it, and, the house was in complete disrepair. I don't know what kind of, shape it was in when the owner financed it, but, it had a pool. The pool was going to have to be filled in. It was, porches, doors hanging by a thread, porches falling in.
Right.
And so they reappraised it for us. And they gave us a reappraisal of $87,500.
Right, right. Well, I do think that, and this is interesting, you bring up an interesting point, that one of the things we're going to start seeing in a lot of towns and cities across America whose tax revenues are falling, we noticed it in Boulder here, that housing prices have come down somewhat, and our tax assessments actually are still going up, even though houses are at level or going down just a tiny bit. So there's going to be a lot more reticence cities and towns to bring their valuations down because they need that tax revenue. So you're a little bit between a rock and a hard place.
That's right. I don't know what step to go to next because we've had this, tax office appraiser come out and look at it and, what he devalued it maybe, $10,000, even though,
That's what he valued it at?
Well, he lowered it $10,000. The loan on the house was like $100,000.
Yeah.
So he lowered it maybe $12,000 to $87,500. But, they probably got this loan on the house like 20 years ago.
Yeah, have you talked to him about the appeals? Is there an appeals process that you can go through there? I mean, it sounds like you may have done that once.
Right, there is an appeals process, but, the man has already came out and looked at the house in person. He knows, he can see.
And my other recommendation might be to get another appraiser who's willing to come out and without telling them what your situation is, and find out if he can give you some comparable prices on other homes in, not far from where you are.
Right, and maybe do a personal appraisal instead of compare it with the tax offices.
Well, you might be able to take that into the tax office and say, look, this is what I have. I know that some places are more amenable to that type of thing, some aren't.
So, right, that's an excellent idea. I hadn't even thought of getting a personal appraisal.
Good advice, and I appreciate that.
Yes,
thank you. Okay, thank you for calling.
Thank you, Colin.
We have Colin from Dallas on the line. Colin, are you there?
Hi there. This is Colin from Dallas. I've kind of been in and out and haven't heard the whole context of this conversation, but I appreciate the guests and the host and so on. My question, I heard a little bleep about hiring a housekeeper once a week being one of the better sort of recommendations as far as, you know, managing, you know, life and your week and so on and so forth. I'd like a little bit more clarification on that because I don't think that a lot of people in this environment have that capability to spend $40 or $50 a week or $200 a month or whatever it adds up to being actually productive when they could actually do some of those things, you know, on their own time.
Yeah, you make a very good point. And mostly what I was trying to get people to do was to just broaden who is on their team. For me, those 4 hours that she frees up, I can do a lot more. I can make more money by doing that, by having those hours freed than I can cleaning my own home. I'm certainly not suggesting that everybody goes out and hire a house cleaner. Like, let's give you an example. Another thing might be maybe you spend 3 hours or 2 hours a week during the summer mowing your yard, and you have a neighborhood kid who's willing to do it, who wants to make some money, who's willing to do it for $10 or $15. But yet then you spend that time in a conversation with your husband or wife around money, and you actually start planning your finances, and you start paying down your debt, and you start looking at it. That may be well worth your time. Do you see what I'm saying?
Actually, I kind of don't. Because we may be talking about, you know, different income levels here and so on and so forth. But
right.
This is not argumentative. It's just trying to figure out, you know, action plan.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know too many people that, they're working hard. For example, my two sisters have maids that come in, I think, once every 2 weeks and spend 8 hours, and they have that disposable income, and they have that disposable free time, but they are not earning anything without that release of 8 hours a day. They're not earning money.
Right.
So what I'm getting at kind of is the demographic that can actually, you know, to try to get out of debt and so on and so forth, sure, a $100 an hour accountant, his time is best spent hiring a maid. Like for someone that is working for $10 an hour, 50 hours a week, I don't think they can do that.
Right, Colin, I think you make a very good point. And we are talking, there is across the spectrum, there are, everyone is going to have different needs and a different financial, different team members. So for someone in that kind of situation that you're talking about, that is, you know, earning $10 an hour, working 50 hours a week, their team may look different. Their team may not have the same people that, you know, another person's team would have on there. I guess the question for you is, I still think that people need team members around them, regardless of whatever level they're at. And maybe for somebody in that lower income bracket, their team members might be two friends from work who are really dedicated to getting out of debt. So that would be, you know, you start creating that team.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the decision to grow your own vegetables versus buying it, there's many things like that. And so you just kind of look at each individual situation and see what you can do. This is Radio Free Market. I'm Jeffrey Hedquist. We'll be back with Whitney Wogan and Chris Opperman right after these messages. Stay tuned. We're back with Radio Free Market. This is Jeffrey Hedquist, and our guests today are Whitney Wogan, the Money Moxie Woman, and Chris Opperman, Opperman, who's got Moxie of his own because Monday he starts at Harvard. And congratulations with that. He's a scholar from the young scholar from the Mises Institute. We're talking about money, of course, your money and the economic situation, what can be done. And so this is the final wrap-up segment. It's the one that we always ask our guests to give perhaps a capsulization, the most potent information they can give to our listeners to walk away with that will really help them. So I'll toss the ball to you first, Whitney.
All righty. Well, since this is a show and we're talking to women particularly, Barbara Stanley said it beautifully. She said, Prince Charming isn't coming. So that would be my first thing to leave you with. The second would be to the importance of paying down your debt. If you are in debt, my husband and I know what that's like. We were deep in credit card debt. Just every little thing you can do to start paying down your debt and start getting that under control, especially in today's environment, is going to be tremendously important.
There you go. And Chris?
We have a saying in the Austrian economics profession that investment is essential to consumption and to wealth creation. So you can't, you can't consume things and you can't live well if you haven't saved. And so, the basis for being independent and for really taking your own financial life and having control of it is to control yourself and to save and to anticipate, what the future is going to hold. So it's really important to save and to remember that today is not all there is.
Are you actually saying that you can't borrow your way out of debt?
Exactly. Contrary to what the establishment tells us.
That's a concept for all of us. And as much as we might make light of it, you're absolutely right. It's a powerful one that I am continuing to learn. So it's running several businesses as well as my personal life. And the term running is always interesting. There's an interesting book study done by, I believe it's Joaquin de Posada, who is a well-known speaker, and it's called Don't Eat the Marshmallow Yet. And I'll paraphrase because I don't have it exactly true, but a group of young children were put in a room and said, here's a marshmallow, you can eat it now, and you'll have your marshmallow, or you can wait 15 minutes, and when we come back, if you haven't eaten your marshmallow, we'll give you more. They went away, and I think 40% of the children had eaten the marshmallow, or maybe it was the other, I think it was 40% had not. Then that 40% then got the additional marshmallow. They then tracked the lives of those kids for several years, decades, and they found out that the ones who had waited, in other words, saved, as you are both advising, were more successful, were happier, had better relationships, and made more money in their lives. So it's very interesting. If you wanted to pass on one thing to your kids or to yourselves, don't eat the marshmallow. Maybe check out that book and that study.
That's great. I love that.
It's nice and it's simple, and it's simple enough for me to get, and I think that's a good one. Any closing comments?
I will just say two quick things. One is, and it's sort of building on what we were talking about earlier with debt and savings, that debt is one of the quotes I've heard is debt is the cruelest illusion of prosperity. So debt is an illusion of prosperity, and that's where our country as a whole is now, tremendously in debt, with this former illusion of prosperity. And I will say that with little bites, taking little bites here and there, you really can make a huge difference in your finances.
Excellent.
Get out there and do it.
Thank you. Excellent advice. Thank you, Chris Opperman. Thank you, Whitney Wogan. And thank you, Michael McKay, for calling in from your meeting with the Fed. This is
thank
Radio
you,
Free Market. And we invite you to go to radiofreemarket.com. Thank you.